yet surpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is so unmeasurable, even in 100,000 versions of us. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Amen. To the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. In the spring of 1976, in the early weeks of her retreat, her master wrote a very digested statement that she entitled, "I'm Glad That I Became a Monk." It includes a number of distilled down expressions of teaching that helped her keep her focus and her grounding during a very, very difficult period. One of the lines in this distilled down statement was, "The body will not know peace until the mind ceases from evil." I want to talk a little bit about the meaning of this statement. I could be remembering wrong, but I think that maybe the original way in which this, the first way in which this was expressed, was something along the lines of, "The body will not cease from illness until the mind ceases from evil." Something along those lines. I think it may have been originally expressed in a more particular way. It may have got changed because of the natural concern that there would be a misunderstanding of this line. To think that the purpose of meditation was to cure the body of illness, which it is not. And I could also be misremembering, by the way. However far one goes spiritually, one is still human and one is still a human being with a human body. And human bodies don't last forever. And human bodies that live long enough to become old become increasingly difficult and painful. As they age, human bodies can always be potentially become ill, and some illnesses are very, very difficult and very painful indeed. So obviously the meaning of this line, the body will not know peace until the mind ceases from evil, cannot be that if our mind ceases from evil, we will no longer know the normal human difficulties of having a human body. Spiritual peace, however, is another matter. That one can be spiritually at peace right in the midst of very great suffering, great pain and difficulty. And this is true for oneself, and it's true for others as well. And this spiritual peace, of course, does have a very beneficent effect upon the body. But it's not magic. And it won't make one immortal or restore youth. There is a deeper meaning, however, than both of these meanings that I've talked about until now. If you think in terms of the stream of karma that includes many lifetimes, this line is saying there will be no peace, no real peace, no lasting peace within this stream of karma until the mind ceases from evil. And in this sense, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about this body or a future body. As long as there is the underlying spiritual need, and that need is being increased rather than decreased by our actions. And remember that our volitional thought is a form of action. It is always the initial, the primary form of action. Remember that Buddhist teaching says there are three kinds of actions: volitional action, actions of thought, actions of speech, actions of body. And the actions of speech and actions of body begin with actions of thought. So now we can see this is saying this simple sentence. Simple statement. The body will not know peace until the mind ceases from evil. It's good, solid Buddhism. If we are nurturing lines of thought that our deluded we are feeding rather than decreasing, we are increasing rather than decreasing the burden of spiritual need that we carry, the need that is the potential for enlightenment. while we are adding to the cause of suffering, we are feeding the progress of unpeacefulness of both body and mind for this lifetime and for possible future lives. Here's another way of putting it. What we think, what we choose to dwell on in our mind, the opinions we choose to give our belief and our effort and our time in support of, the views that we choose to adopt and to nurture, the attitudes that we nurture in our thought, these can be, if they are delusional, if they have an element of delusion, they can be, they will be, additional fuel for the fires of suffering. This is why meditation and the precepts are so important and why they go hand in hand. We need both. Without meditation, we never penetrate deeply into the true spirit of the precepts. We get stuck at more superficial levels, where we continue to rattle around, bounce around among dualities, fair and unfair, just and unjust, good and evil, right and wrong. Meditation, we have at least the opportunity to penetrate more deeply into the true spirit of the precepts and come to know and come to think that all beings are Buddhas, first and foremost Buddhas, not first and foremost sinners. That we ourselves are first and foremost children of Buddha, not first and foremost doers of good and or evil, or doers of good and evil. That everything that happens to us, if we can bow to it and keep an open, upward-looking heart, we can come to see as being for our good. By our thoughts, we increase the load of suffering for ourselves and for others in this world. By our thoughts, we decrease the load of suffering for ourselves and for others in this world. in our training, our focus is always on training ourselves, not on what others are doing, whether that doing be viewed by us as good or evil or anything else. My training is my training, and no one can do it for me. Your training is your training. No one can do it for you. Body and mind can come to know that peace that surpasses all understanding. But they can only do this if they're given a true opportunity to do it. Judgments of good and evil, right and wrong, fair and unfair, realities. In our sense of outrage at an injustice that we witness, we can ourselves do killing of the mind. In our mind, we can wish evil upon another in the illusion that this is justice. We may not be able to lift a finger to play God, but we may be playing God in our own mind. And the law of karma applies to what we do in our own mind just as well as what we do in speech and in body. Attitudes that we nurture. We choose views and opinions. That we breathe life into in our mind and our heart and then get shackled with and imprisoned by. We truly meditate, we can allow these superficialities, these unrealities, to dissolve into the immaculacy of nothingness. And we can take refuge in that which is true and real, which is our own Buddha nature. It means nothing to the eternal, to the Buddha nature, merciful, kind, or cruel. Infinite love just loves. Infinite wisdom just does its best at all times to help. When we sit still with an upward-looking heart, we allow that which is unreal to dissolve into emptiness. Then mind and body naturally harmonize with our true nature. And even one moment in which this happens shows the way in which it can happen more thoroughly and more deeply over time. We don't have to make ourselves the victims of either hope or despair. We can live now, ceasing from evil truly, and knowing that which is beyond all